would just mention all these problems. We're insisting that you're finished within 15 minutes. It's not fair to other people. And because it's a difficult day, we're pleading with people. We're at least 4 minutes behind time. So it's like last time.
Many people commented, Chair, they didn't use the full 15 minutes. So don't use the 15 minutes if you don't need to. Remember, we will read every command full stop of yours. The researchers will do it. We will do a summary of everything. National Treasury will do a summary. So it's not as if you have to say everything here. Thank you. So we're starting right now. You've got 15 minutes. Some of you got 10 minutes, obviously, because you were here before. Thank you. And you know your time.
Great. Good morning, everybody. My name is Jessica Byrne. I'm a dietitian and the chief operating officer for the Association for Dietetics in South Africa, or abbreviated to ADSA, as I'll use in the presentation. Firstly, just thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today to present on behalf of ADSA. It's really wonderful to be here today. In my presentation, I just would like to share a bit about why ADSA is in support of the sugar tax, and particularly I'd like to go into a little bit of detail about the consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages in South Africa and the impact on health, and then look at a few recommendations that we as ADSA have in terms of ways that we can strengthen the sugar tax. I do apologize if there is some repetition from previous hearings. We haven't been at previous hearings before, but I do sometimes think that it is good to repeat and to reinforce certain important points. So just before I delve into the issues about the sugar tax itself, I would just like to introduce ADSA for those of you who aren't familiar. So we are a professional organization for registered dietitians. And we've been around for about 29 years now, and our vision is really to represent and develop the dietetic profession to contribute towards achieving optimal nutrition for all South Africans. And some of the work that we do is involved in sharing evidence-based public health messages for the public and providing input into regulations and policies such as this. So just to start off with, just to remind us all about the definition of free sugars according to the World Health Organization. So these are energy-providing sugars, such as glucose, fructose, sucrose, which are added to foods and drinks either by food manufacturers or by the cook or consumer, as well as sugars that are naturally present in honey, syrups, fruit juices, and fruit juice concentrates. If we look at, there's been a number of different studies in a variety of populations and settings in South Africa which do show that the intake of free sugars is increasing dramatically in South Africa, both in adults and in children and in urban and rural settings alike. And some of the studies estimate for children that the intake is between 40 to 60 grams of sugar a day, up to about 100 grams in certain groups, and this can provide as much as 20% of the total dietary energy intake. A study recently looked at the micronutrient status of children and found that carbonated beverages were above the in the top foods or drinks consumed by children and was actually consumed even more so than milk. And they found that the foods or drinks that contributed to the main sources of added sugar were white sugar and sugar-sweetened beverages. Just to remind us again of the recommendations provided by the World Health Organization for the limits for sugar intake, they do recommend that we reduce our intake of free sugars to less than 10% of our total energy intake from food and beverages. So that equates to about 50 grams of sugar. They also have recommended for further health benefits a further reduction to of total energy intake. Our South African food-based dietary guidelines do also recommend that we use sugar and food and drinks high in sugar sparingly, and they are also in line with the WHO recommendations where we recommend an upper limit of no more than 10% of total energy intake and with further reductions to about 6% for those who are at risk, for example those with pre-diabetes or insulin resistance. Just to remind us, when we talk about sugar-sweetened beverages, or SSBs, so these are any beverages that contain added sweeteners that provide energy, whether those sweeteners are sucrose, high fructose, corn syrup, fruit juice concentrates, etc. And we have seen a dramatic increase in the sales of sugar-sweetened beverages globally, but also in South Africa, and again, in a variety of different settings. And if we look at the typical a typical carbonated beverage, a can contains about 35 grams of sugar, and this really does provide quite a significant source of free sugars in our diet. If we think about that recommendation from the WHO of limiting it to less than 50 grams. So if we look at the impact of sugar consumption on health, we know that the intake of free sugars, particularly sugars as sugar-sweetened beverages, increases our kilojoule or energy intake from our diet and consequently increases our risk for overweight and obesity. We know that the evidence is particularly strong for liquid sugar in the form of sugar-sweetened beverages. And some of the reasons for this is that liquids don't provide as much satiety or reduce our appetite as much as solid food does. So often if we drink a liquid, a sugary drink, it doesn't fill us up as much and our body doesn't compensate by then reducing the intake or the amount of food that we take in. And so our total calorie intake increases. We also know that sugar from sugary drinks can alter our metabolism, can lead to insulin resistance, high triglyceride levels, abdominal obesity, and all of this is often independent of weight gain too. So we really know that there is strong evidence that sugar from beverages can increase our risk for overweight and obesity. I don't need to remind us that we know that South Africa has a massive burden of overweight and obesity, both in men, women, and in children too. And this is really concerning because we know that it's putting our children at a much greater risk for non-communicable diseases at a much earlier age. And we've definitely seen that these diseases are increasing. The recent mortality report from Stats South Africa shows that that diabetes has now moved up to the second leading cause of death in South Africa. So that's very concerning. We also know that liquid sugars increase the risk for dental caries. And because most of the sugary drinks don't really have any other important nutrients, these empty calories as such actually can displace more nutritious foods and beverages in the diet and can dilute the micronutrient intake and increase the risk for micronutrient deficiencies. So we know that these problems place a significant financial burden on the healthcare system, but also affect the individual in terms of disability, loss of employment, and place a massive burden on the individual, the family, and the community too. So just to briefly touch on you know, why a tax on sugary drinks is suggested. We know that it's a cost-effective way to address the problem of obesity, and one of the benefits is that it has a wide reach, so it can reach the entire population rather than being targeted at a certain group or community. There is strong evidence which shows that a sugar tax actually leads to a reduction in sugary drink consumption, and also can increase the consumption of healthier options such as water, milk, etc. Particularly, we see that lower income consumers seem to receive the most benefit and seem to have the greatest reduction in consumption of these sugary drinks. And this is generally because they're more responsive to price increases. But also, this population often is more affected by obesity and non-communicable diseases. A tax can also increase public awareness of the harms of sugary drinks and can really incentivize the beverage industry to reformulate their products and to market healthier beverage options. We know that it can also generates some revenue, which can be used to fund important health programs. And there is good evidence from a modeling study to show that a 20% tax can have a significant impact on obesity rates in South Africa, which is very encouraging. If we look at what's been happening around the world, I think Mexico is an excellent example. They introduced a sugar tax in 2014 and have already seen quite a significant reduction in the consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages, particularly in the poorer, lower-income households. And they have also seen that there's been an increase in healthier options being purchased. Other countries such as the UK, Brazil, Chile have also been promoting a sugar tax. And if we look at examples like Hungary and Denmark, taxes that they've introduced on other unhealthy food products has led to reduced purchases of those food products. There's a number of research studies and a systematic review by the World Health Organization which shows that a sugar tax should be implemented at 20% or greater to really have a significant impact on purchasing behaviors, consumption, etc. So as I mentioned, ADSA does support the sugar tax, and we really do applaud the government for proposing this sugar tax as a way to address obesity, but we do feel that there are certain areas that can be strengthened to make sure that the tax is the most effective it can be. And firstly, we suggest that all the sugar in sugar-sweetened beverages should be taxed, and the tax rate should be increased. So currently, there's a proposed discount for the first 4 grams of sugar per 100 mils of a beverage, and these will be exempt. This first 4 grams will be exempt from the tax, and this really excludes a large portion of sugar. And really, there's actually no health justification for excluding this first 4 grams of sugar, and it really can reduce the health impact of the tax. Initially, when the tax was proposed, it was proposed at a rate of 20%, but now it's currently at a rate of 11%. And I've just included an example here just to show the impact that this reduction has. If we look at a 1 liter bottle of a carbonated drink, which has about 106 grams of sugar, currently only 66 grams of that sugar will be taxed. And you can see that it's quite significantly lower in terms of the tax that will be added on with this new tax rate. So as I mentioned, there is a lot of evidence which shows that the tax needs to be at a significantly high rate to really have a meaningful impact, particularly at 20% is suggested. And so ADSA recommends that the 4 gram discount is removed from the tax, so that all the sugar in sugar-sweetened beverages is taxed, and that it's taxed at a higher rate of 20%. Then just to touch on concentrates, so currently the tax rate for concentrates, so that's squashes or syrups, is half the rate of the ready-to-drink products. So it's currently at 1.05 cents per gram of sugar above that 4 grams per 100 ml.
Sorry, but you're at 12 minutes 32.
Okay, thank you. So we know that the consumption of concentrates is increasing quite drastically in South Africa, but actually these have a very similar sugar content to carbonated beverages. And so we do recommend that, again, for the tax to be most effective, that the tax rate for concentrates should be increased to align to the tax rate for ready-to-drink beverages. Also, just to touch on that, for example, powdered drinks that are reconstituted with water, currently it's not very clear whether these actually form part of the tax too. So this includes things like hot chocolate powders, juice powders, etc. And they also contain a significant portion of sugar. So we do recommend that these are also included in the definition of a sugar-sweetened beverage, so that they also do form part of the scope of the tax. Just to also briefly touch on dairy drinks. So currently it's been proposed that intrinsic and added sugars will be included in the tax, but that milk is exempt. And currently it's not really clear then if the taxable amount will be on the added sugar in a sweetened dairy drink, or whether it will also include that intrinsic sugar in the dairy product, i.e. the lactose in that dairy product. We do know that unsweetened dairy products are definitely the best way to consume dairy drinks, but that sweetened dairy products can also provide a source of beneficial nutrients and definitely can be a healthier alternative to sweetened carbonated drinks. We know that milk and calcium intake in South Africa is low, and so we actually recommend that rather than penalizing the consumer in terms of the price, we suggest that the tax is only calculated on the added sugar in a sweetened dairy drink rather than the total sugar content. In terms of fruit juices, again, we know currently that 100% fruit juice will be exempt, but I just wanted to remind everyone of the definition of an intrinsic sugar from the World Health Organization, which says that it's the sugar incorporated into cell structures of intact fruits and vegetables. So currently, according to that definition, we can't really think of a fruit juice as an intrinsic sugar.
It's 15 minutes. Can maybe give an extra minute.
I just have two more slides. Is that all right? Thank you. I'll be quick. So we can't really think of fruit juice as an intrinsic sugar because once the fruit has been juiced, the cell structures have been damaged. So fruit juice should be considered as a free sugar, and we do recommend that this should be included as part of the tax and not be exempt. Then just our last suggestion is for some of the revenue from the tax to be used for health promotion. We know that it's only one piece of the puzzle to address obesity, but we really do recommend that we need additional interventions to support the tax, particularly interventions around education, around for healthy choices, creating an enabling environment to make those healthy choices easier, such as food labeling, advertising regulations, etc. And we have already seen in countries such as Mexico that some of the revenue generated from the tax is already being used for other health promotion activities. So we do recommend that the revenue is used to support the implementation of the Department of Health strategy for the prevention of obesity and the various programs and activities that they have already recommended as part of that strategy. So just in summary, I'd like to close by saying ADSA acknowledges that many South Africans are at a greater health risk due to the high consumption of free sugars, particularly as sugar-sweetened beverages. We do support the tax, but we propose that it should be at the higher rate, and that there are ways that we can strengthen the tax to make it more effective to have a greater impact. I've just included some references if anyone's interested. Thank you.
Just to alert members, the first vote occurs shortly after 10. We'll have a full 5 minutes to go down, and then I'm waiting for the list of votes to come. And I'm sorry once again to those of you who came late, and there's nothing we can do. The House is voting from 10 this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Karim. The next presentation is from the South African NCDs Alliance. I'm told we're here the last time, and you'll only be getting 10 minutes. Thank you very much. Over to you, ma'am.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Yes, we were here before, so there's two of us that's presenting. It's going to be short. As you mentioned, madam, it's about the touchy-feely and the feelings, and today I'm talking about feelings. I represent the NCD Alliance, which includes Diabetes South Africa, Cancer Association, and also Heart and Stroke Foundation. My name is Rosanna Ali. I am a diabetes specialist nurse, and I don't think anybody actually knows what that is, but I'm going to briefly just tell you my role is providing diabetes education to patients, to nurses, to doctors, and also to community health workers in order to upskill and to gain that information for patients with management of diabetes and hypertension. Okay. So my patient's story is somebody that you all know. This is somebody in your homes. This is somebody that your family members, could be yourself. It could be your daughter, your mother, your father. And Wasile was a patient that was diagnosed with diabetes when she was quite young. I think she was about 38 years old. She was diagnosed with type 2 after having realized that she has a family history of type 2 diabetes. Unfortunately, within a short period of time, she injured herself and she developed an ulcer on her foot. And within a short period of time, again, I think it was about 6 months, she had her first foot amputation. She unfortunately arrived at my rooms and asked for a bit of assistance because she'd been going around to her diabetes specialist doctor, to the clinics, and nobody could identify that she actually had an ulcer on her foot. Unfortunately, she lost the foot a short while later. As you understand, with diabetes and the complications thereof, it advances very quickly, and again, within about 2 years, she had lost her life. In that period of time, she had actually she had lost a foot. She had a below-knee amputation. The second foot was also amputated, and then lost interest in what she was doing. She wasn't able to test her blood sugar levels, and lost her life. Her sister was also diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. After a while, she had lost a job. She was a teacher. She lost a job. She couldn't afford to actually get to
sorry,
the hospital.
Sorry to disturb you. I get a feel that majority of members don't have your presentation, including myself. So
okay. I think we handed, we made quite a few copies. Okay. Oh, that's the one. Okay.
All right, continue, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. So when she lost the job, she unfortunately couldn't get to the clinic. She couldn't get the medication. She couldn't eat the right kind of meals, and this gives her kind of a depression, and that's why she ended up actually killing herself in a way. She died from depression. She died because she chose not to eat the right kind of meals because she couldn't afford it. She chose not to take a medication because she knew she wasn't going to be able to test her blood glucose levels. So Wasila's story is, like I said, it's like any one of us. Could have been anyone. Could have been your family members. And these are the patients that we are seeing regularly. As time goes, we see our type 2 patients more regularly. And we see that there's a growing number of people with type 2 diabetes, as it is the second highest cause of mortality in South Africa at the moment. And the complications that are due to uncontrolled diabetes include blindness, heart disease, loss of limbs, renal failure, and ultimately loss of life. It's nothing that you don't know. It's nothing that you haven't heard of. But it's a catastrophic illness that leads to loss of income for patients, and it's a driver of poverty within the low to middle income communities. Okay. The SANCD Alliance endorses the sugar tax and proposes a proportion of this taxation to be allocated to NHI, dedicated to the holistic approach in the prevention and treatment of people living with NCDs. We need the nurses trained. We need blood glucose meters. We need blood glucose strips. We need medication for our patients. It should also include obesity prevention and diabetes care to help people like Wasila, like your mom, like your dad, like your family member. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Melissa Wallace. I'm from the Cancer Association of South Africa, and I'm going to continue with the presentation. Cancer is part of the South African NCD Alliance, and we have presented previously on our stance on the introduction of the sugar tax and the relationship between obesity and cancer. So I'm not going to be talking about that today. Instead, I'm going to be focusing on the costs of cancer, both financial and social, and the ripple effect that this creates. South Africa is set to see a 78% increase in cancer incidence by 2030. Only around 16% of people in South Africa have some form of medical aid, which means that 84% are making use of the public sector for screening for cancer, detection and diagnosis, treatment, rehabilitation and palliation. And of course, well, while cancer incidence is increasing globally and in particular in South Africa, treatment costs are rising globally too. The cost of drugs are getting more expensive. This is obviously going to place an enormous burden on the public health sector. There will be considerable financial knock-on effects and also far-reaching social effects. But today I'm not really going to be focusing on the impact for the public health sector, but rather for the individual. So what does it cost to have cancer? What does it cost to treat cancer? Looking at breast cancer as an example, of course it varies considerably depending on the type of breast cancer you have, when it's diagnosed and what treatment is recommended. But this would give you some idea of some of the costs that might be incurred. Firstly, to diagnose it, then to decide on a course of treatment. If there's surgery required, mastectomy, some reconstructive surgery possibly, chemotherapy or radiotherapy may be required after that, and then ongoing hormonal therapy. And as you can see, the costs can really rocket. For people who are lucky to be on medical aid will cover some of this, but that is becoming increasingly inadequate for the costs that result from cancer treatment. And what about someone who's in the public sector? The costs of the actual treatment for them might be minimal, but what about the indirect costs of cancer treatment? I'd like to draw on some data from the FertiVoice study conducted by Lynn Edwards and Linda Hreff, which was part-funded by Cancer, and they aim to collect evidence-based material for cancer advocacy purposes. They interviewed over 300 people with cancer around South Africa and to find out about their experiences. And numerous themes emerged from this data, but relating particularly to the impact, the financial implications of cancer, they reported that in many cases, family members have to sacrifice their own jobs to take care of a cancer patient in the family. Patients themselves end up losing their jobs. For those who are lucky enough to have paid leave, eventually this runs out, and then they have unpaid leave if they manage to keep their jobs. Transport to and from hospitals from rural areas is a big challenge, and rural patients also have to go sometimes for weeks of radiation at a treatment center. And where do they stay? How do they afford accommodation for that? Urban patients who live in quite close to treatment centers can't cover the transport costs for daily radiation treatment at tertiary hospitals. Sometimes patients don't have money to buy the food or the supplements they need when they're on cancer treatment. And even patients on medical aid sometimes can't afford the co-payment that's required to access their pain medication. So there are considerable indirect costs.
Sorry, I know it may sound inhumane, but we're at 9 minutes, and you had 15 minutes before, if you could round up.
Okay. I have some examples from this research to share with you. I'll just perhaps share one. Albertina, she's 40 years old. She says, I borrowed money from my neighbor to pay for my taxi to come to Cape Town for treatment because every time I go to the clinic to book hospital transport, the sister tells me it is full. I had to get to the hospital for my treatment appointment, so it cost me 15 rand from my house to Frederiksberg and then 100 rand for the taxi to Cape Town. I don't know how I'm going to find the transport money for the other treatments I must go for. I don't know if I will be able to work after this cancer and how will I support myself. There are many other examples. Anton, 46 years old, also talks about the financial implications, and Miranda as well. And then what about the people who did not survive cancer? What about the people who die from cancer and the people that they leave behind? There is evidence to show that premature maternal death impacts significantly on the survival of children, particularly during infancy, but up to at least 10 years of age in low and middle income countries. This is regardless of whether the mother is the breadwinner or not. This is worth considering in our country where there are so many female-headed households. And what of the children who do survive and are left orphaned? We know from the vast literature on orphans and vulnerable children in South Africa left as a result of the HIV epidemic that the outcomes for them are far poorer, psychologically, physically, and socially. That's it.
Thank you very much.
And I think in fairness to me, firstly, as I said before, I didn't construct time. It's we're using a stopwatch. And we have to hear both sides of the argument. You see, already the first two speakers, the first two have exceeded by 4.5 minutes. Now, it would not be fair to other stakeholders on each side of the divide. Secondly, maybe we should say this. It will help some of the NGOs. The vast majority in the committee seem to me to be clear that the academic and scientific evidence is overwhelmingly obvious that sugar has a severe effect on health. And what we're finding is people are not observing the other hearings or remembering that they told us these things before. So your ground is substantially covered. The difficulty, Comrade Chair, because one has to facilitate, is that both sides, each side makes genuflections to the other side, but both sides are just sticking to their positions. And as a committee, what we've said is we need to find ultimately a balance between having a sugar levy, sugar beverages levy, recognizing that with unemployment being what it is, we have to reduce jobs to a loss, and at the same time also create space for African emerging sugarcane farmers and other constituencies. So we can't prescribe to you what to say, but you're preaching to the converted. That's what we're saying. We agree with you. Help us to deal with it. Don't cover the same ground. Colleagues, we've got 5 minutes to go down, and then we are still waiting for the list. It'll come through. So can we stick to our times, please? And also you have to engage with us. It's like we're hearing the same over and over again. That's your right. But help us. We're pleading with you. Otherwise, we're stuck. You know, both sides are so stuck in their own parts. We have to go down now. We'll be back as soon as we can. Thank you. Can we also ask you to confer on both sides of the divide while you're here? See if you can strike some consensus. No, don't laugh. I mean, that's the issue, really. Thank you.